Welcome, and thank you for listening to Optics in Action, where we showcase leaders with vision and clarity. My name is Ryan Weiss, founder and CEO of EPS. Our team is focused on enabling companies to align people and process for increased revenue, profitability, and scalable growth, while reducing the frustrations of your employees and customers. If you or someone you know is interested in applying to be a guest on this podcast, you can find more information at podcast.epsoptics.com. Let's get to our next guest. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Optics in Action, where we spotlight leaders with vision and clarity. And today we have with us a guest that I'm really excited to learn more about. It's Mike Kading. And Mike is doing something really important for our culture today, and that is looking at creating housing, if I understand it all correctly, creating housing at lower cost for people who are, look, housing is getting expensive these days, Mike. So tell us a little bit more about what you're doing and how we're impacting communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me. You know, at a high level, what we do at Norhart is we design, build, and rent apartments, but we're really focused on driving down the cost of housing. We've been achieving about a 20 to 30% reduction in those construction costs, and we believe that over time, we can achieve a 50% reduction. But imagine what that means. It means someday your rent or your mortgage payment could be half. And that's our dream, is to ultimately solve America's housing affordability crisis.
That's fantastic. I love it. And I always like to ask guests when we get started, why are you doing this? Why is this important to you? Why are you passionate about it? Like, what's the why behind this?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, for me, my dad died at a relatively young age. And it really reminded me how short life really is. We only live about 5,000 weeks here on Earth. And I often ask myself the question, how do I want to spend the minutes I have here on Earth? And for me, a big part of that answer is I want to try to make some kind of meaningful, positive impact in the world. And just kind of life circumstances where I'm at today, my skill set, it lines up with working to solve that housing affordability. We can do that in a meaningful way. We can meaningfully impact people's lives for the better. And that's really what drives me. I care less about money. Like, who cares how many millions of dollars they shovel under a grave? It just doesn't matter. But I care much more about the impact that I can make in life.
Yeah, I love that. I love talking with folks who have a clear purpose and a focus of making an impact in other people's lives. And, that's really what creates a legacy. So, you already shared with us just a little bit about how you are trying to solve the housing crisis. So tell us what that looks like. So you said you design, build apartments and housing, and you're driving costs out of this. So what does that look like? How are you doing that?
Yeah, what's crazy is if you look at other industries like manufacturing, over the past 60 years, they've reduced labor productivity or improved labor productivity by 760%. Other industries like agriculture has improved it by 1,500%. But in the world of construction, it's remained stagnant at just 10% over 60 years. It's nothing. Yeah. And so all we're doing is we're taking the lessons learned from these other industries and applying it into our own. To give you some sense of this, typically in construction, you have a bunch of different companies coming to work together on one project, and then they break apart after that. Imagine for a moment if a construction company were to produce a car. You'd have a different company installing the windshield, a different company installing the door, and a different company yet again installing the wheel. And of course, the wheel company, they would call you up and say, hey, I'm so sorry. I got delayed on another project. and I can't get out to your site for 2 weeks, you would be shut down. See, the world of manufacturing looks at us and says, dude, you are crazy. But we look back at them and say, this is the way it's always been done. But it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
So one of the big first things we did was bring all of the work under one roof. We've got all the different trades, plumbing, electrical, HVAC. We have precast concrete, wall panel manufacturing, supply chain, engineering, architecture, all in one place. But just that one thing starts enabling new techniques in the world of construction. And this first one, this one I'll share is revolutionary. Okay. Maybe not so revolutionary, but it has a huge impact. And that is the assembly line. See, in the world of manufacturing, that radically improved what they did. Why not apply that to construction? Now, the problem with the assembly line is you can't take a building and drive it down the line. But what you can do is you can take the person and move them through the building. So right now, at about every 5 hours, our teams shift through the building by one unit. And so if you look at the end of our building, every 5 hours, we have a brand new apartment unit completed. And that one technique alone can take a project that might have taken 15 months and drive it down to 9.
Yeah. Well, I can just imagine. So I've worked with a number of general contractors and rental services that are renting equipment for job sites and supply chain and design firms. And as you look at the complexity of all of these processes converging together, I can see what you're talking about, that there's that concept of taking these modules and or taking people and kind of working through the modules, if you will, that revolutionization of manufacturing and applying it to construction. I think that's a great metaphor, a great example that that we can visualize. So I love it. So how is this, I always talk about the intersection of people and process. Mm-hmm. So talked a little bit about the process. How is this impacting the people, the workforce? How do you integrate the workforce and align the workforce and get your team all working under a new sort of way of working in construction?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's the most important thing that we do within our organization, because ultimately the way you drive down costs is by solving problems. And there's 10,000 little problems, and there's no way you as one leader can solve all 10,000 problems. So the way you need to look at it is, how do I build the team? How do I build the people to be those problem solvers, that continuous improvement kind of environment and culture? And fundamentally, the most important lesson I've ever learned is it starts with finding the best people. And when I say the best, I know a lot of leaders talk about that, but in this case, I truly mean the best. We will fly people in from other states to come work during the week and fly them home on the weekend. One of our team members in 2007, Steve Jobs announces the brand new iPhone. Steve Jobs walks off stage and our team member walks on that same stage following Steve Jobs' announcement. It's that kind of caliber of people. Now, most business leaders at this point look at me and say, Mike, that sounds expensive. And it is. If you're looking at it as a cost per person, it is expensive. But what most business leaders, including myself a number of years ago, fail to understand is that the best people outperform the average by 2 to 5 to even 10 times as much. So instead of looking at it on a cost per person basis, if you look at it on a cost per unit produced, the best people are actually your least expensive. Yeah. So for the leaders who feel that they can't afford to hire the best, I respond simply that you can't afford not to.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, I love the vision that you're casting here, that you're creating. And when did you get started in this, and how did you get started in this? This is a really, really interesting vision that you're putting out there. So how long have you been in business, or when did you first get started?
Yeah, it was originally a family business. My parents started the business. In fact, we lost everything growing up. My dad was kidnapped in Peru, crazy side story.
Wow.
But we rebuilt it up as I was a kid. So I remember being on site, sweeping, picking up nails, like doing mediocre kind of work, but it helped me learn, understand the environment. And then I went off to school and I wanted nothing to do, nothing at all to do with this small family business. And the reason that was is simply because I didn't want people to think it was given to me. So I really wrestled with my own ego. But what I started realizing, kind of talking back about that why, is that deep down, I just wanted to make a meaningful impact in the world. I said to myself, I can either go off on my own, start completely from scratch, which is viable. It's great. There's a lot of great people who have done that. Or I can join with my parents. It was a very small business at the time, but join my parents' small business and make, let this grow to the point of having that kind of world impact. So I swallowed my own ego, jumped into the business, and my dad and I doubled the size of the company within the first couple of years of working together. It's amazing. We were two peas in a pod. But then one day, unexpectedly, my dad passed away. We weren't expecting it, just totally out of the blue. So overnight, I became CEO of this small business. And it was really, really rough in the early years. I remember cities and people didn't believe that I could do it. And frankly, I wasn't sure that I could either. And so wrestling through that, working past a lot of those challenges, eventually gave way to making bigger impacts. And we've grown a lot since then.
Yeah. How did you, if this question's out okay, then let me know.
No,
how do you deal with the emotions? Because as business owners and business leaders, there are emotional impacts of things. And the passing of your father unexpectedly, this business transition, like how did you as a leader, as a stepping into that role as CEO, how did you deal with the emotions around that of keeping it going and navigating the challenges of going through that?
Such a great question. You know, I have an opportunity to spend time with household name people, celebrity level people, billionaire level people. And one of the questions I often ask myself when I'm talking to them is, what did they do differently? And in my interactions with all these people, the number one thing I would say that they do differently than the average person, it really comes down to their mindset. It's quite simple, but it's true for my own story. Every stage of our growth, every year, there is something that comes out of the woodwork that punches you hard in the gut. Like it should knock you out. You should be done. You should give up and go home. And most people, once they hit that level of challenge, father passing, city shut me down at one point, financial issues, a whole gamut of things. If you let those things shut you down, that's the difference, right? Don't let that be the reality. So I spent a lot of my life just dealing with those gut punches. And the key is just to put the next foot in front of the other over and over and over again. But unless you're willing to put up with the stress and the strain that comes with that, it'll be a really challenging road.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of sort of people talking about, you know, starting a business, leaving a corporate life. Being a leader of an organization is not an easy path. There's a lot of things that those challenges that you just articulated, whether it was your father, the financial issues, you know, all those things, having the grit and the vision and keeping that as a compelling thing in your life to create a legacy and submit some of those other feelings or submit some of those other challenges to keep focusing on that vision. And I'm sure your father would be proud of you and the legacy that you're looking to carry on and to continue building. So that's a really powerful message that you're sharing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, Elon Musk talks about how it's hard to produce a car, but it is 10 to 100 to 1,000 times harder to build the system that builds that car. And it's really interesting. If you look back at every step in his journey, but even my own journey, you take on bigger and harder challenges every step of the way. So one year you can look back a couple of years ago and be like, dude, I thought that was a huge problem. That was nothing. That was easy, right? And it's always having one foot in, you're straddling this line between the biggest challenges and like safety. You don't want to go too far crazy because it'll just be crushed. But you need to always be pushing yourself to take on that next challenge.
Yeah. So what's next for your organization? What's next for your team? Like, as you look at the next 3 to 5 years, as you're integrating and, bringing all these trades together and the design and all of those things together, I've got to believe that there's opportunities for automations and for maybe even AI integration and things like that to keep enabling your team to be more and more successful. And as you said, even driving down the cost, it's hard for me to imagine driving down the cost by 50% of building a new apartment complex. What's the vision look like 3 to 5 or further out in the future?
Yeah, our dream over the next decade is to reach 192,000 units under management with a 60,000 unit per year construction pace. At that sort of level, we're having enough impact on specific markets. We're producing so much supply that prices start coming down naturally, not just for our own residents, but for everyone in those markets. That's where we're headed. When it gets to technology, there are some really interesting technologies out there. But I will say this first. It's not the technology. It's the people and it's the systems you have in place. That is 95% of the effort and energy. In fact, Walter Isaacson's new book of Elon Musk, there's a section in that book that talks about how Elon at one point cut a hole in the side of his factory and was moving automation and equipment out of the factory just because there's a place for it, but it's not the end-all be-all solution. With that said, some of the cool new technologies we're looking at and working on is there's robots that can come in and paint entire units. There's self-driving excavation equipment where you can get a whole site leveled and set up right by just sitting in a lawn chair controlling an iPad. There is technology where we're trying to build this out where we can actually submit a site plan to a computer. And all of the knowledge and expertise of our architects and engineers has been built in the system so it can compute out the most efficient design building, having looked at millions of possibilities. And then once it's done that, design the entire set of plans and then actually produce out schedules and material ordering and the whole gamut of things that we need then to support the construction team in providing that. So there's a lot of fun stuff that we're looking at and working on.
Yeah, I love the answer that you just gave, by the way, that I think there's a lot of buzz about technology and automations and AI and all these types of things. And I love how you brought it back to it starts with people and systems first, because I think that a lot of people get drawn by the buzz and they kind of chase after something without even really thinking about the impact. And one of my core beliefs, and I think you articulated it very well, is that technology is only helpful to the extent that it helps people to do something better, more efficiently, more effectively. So doing technology for the sake of doing technology is not really helpful. And in fact, it can be detrimental. It can actually cause problems for organizations and teams and customers and outcomes if it's not deployed with the intention of helping people and systems. So I think that's
exactly
a really fantastic answer.
We've gone down that road. I made that mistake myself. One example is smart home technologies. And there's some cool stuff like thermostats, but we went down the route of like enabling everything in the unit down to light switches and outlets and all this cool stuff. Now, it sounded cool. There's a fun app. But there's one fundamental issue I failed to really understand. And that is like for a light switch, you're competing with how easy it is to click the light switch, right? So if you're having to pull up an app, open it up, click, wait a second for the response time, like it just doesn't work. And so we were creating cool technology for the sake of cool technology without solving real problems.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you look at the markets that you're serving, I mean, it sounds like with the number of units that you're talking about in the next decade, with the vision that you're bringing together here, I don't suppose you're just in the Minneapolis area or just in Minnesota. Like, are you expanding nationwide? Is there a region that you've been focused on primarily? Or are you looking to take this concept global and go beyond the borders of North America?
Yeah, so for our system, we actually stay fairly concentrated because, again, we're building the system that builds housing. So we're trying to be the largest, we're becoming the largest developer in our area. So we're focused right now in Minnesota. We have some manufacturing in Wisconsin, although you can't do 60,000 units in the Twin Cities market. You would just crush that market. So what we're doing now is looking to expand into Texas. And the reason I like Texas is there's a lot of population within about a 3-hour drive of each other. It's also close to the Mexican border. We're looking to do some wall panel manufacturing in Mexico. And so that will probably be our next location and then expanding off to the Sun Belt in the next decade. But that's about as far as we would get in a decade.
Very good. Well, I think it's incredibly wise to build a system first and then take it out for replication in other areas. And for sure, I imagine with local building codes and things like that, that you're going to have to navigate a lot of people issues and just replicating a process somewhere else doesn't always just happen exactly the same way. So I think there's a lot of wisdom in what you're doing of creating the system first and refining it prior to trying to blow it out.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on Optics in Action. How do people find out more about what you're doing or connect with you if they're interested in learning more?
Yeah, the best way is to go to our website, norhart.com. That's norhart.com. On there, there's two kind of interesting things we have going on. The first is our podcast, Zero to Unicorn. It's about the journey of small business growing to $1 billion scale. One of my favorite guests was Michael Uslan, who's the executive producer and the originator of Batman. As a fairly young kid, he got a few investors together to eke out enough money to buy the movie rights to Batman. And he thought this would be a slam dunk, but it wasn't. It took him 10 years, 10 years of people slamming the door in his face, telling them that he can't do it, that nobody wants to see a dark and serious Batman movie before he was actually able to make that a reality. So that's one fun thing. The other fun thing is we have a new investment platform where people can actually invest capital and earn a great rate of return in what we're doing. So that's what we have going on. And we'd love to connect with anyone who wants to connect with us.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again, Mike Kading, for being on Optics in Action, where we spotlight leaders with vision and clarity. And it is very clear to me that you've got a great vision and that you're moving in an amazing direction with your organization and team.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Optics in Action podcast. If you are interested in the podcast, we welcome you to subscribe on your preferred platform, follow us on LinkedIn, or learn more at epsoptics.com. If you or someone you know is interested in applying to be a guest on this podcast, you can find more information at podcast.epsoptics.com. This is Ryan Weiss, thanking you for listening to Optics in Action.